Welcome to Wellness Wednesday on All Sides with Ann Fisher. Virtual reality games can transport you to another world. And when it comes to distracting patients during difficult procedures, more hospitals are taking advantage of that. Joining us by phone is the director of hematology at Nationwide Children's Hospital, Dr. Amy Dunn. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much.
And also with me in the studio, game designer and interactive architect at Nationwide Children's Hospital, Jeremy Patterson. Welcome to the show.
Great to be here. Thank you.
At Nationwide, young patients with hemophilia, a rare blood disorder, are given a hands-free VR game, virtual reality game, to distract them from some regular infusions they get. What's the point, Dr. Dunn?
Well, my boys with hemophilia often get factor replacement therapy, and the only way to do this is through needles. And many of my patients have to do this procedure multiple times per week, every month, every year of their lives so that they can stay healthy. So that's a lot of needles. And as you can imagine, needles in children are not usually a great combination. So anything we can do to relieve them of the stress or anxiety around their life-saving medical treatment is incredibly important. So I've partnered with Jeremy's group to design a virtual reality environment that's working really well in our clinic to help our patients.
Do you install ports for the needles, or do they get a fresh needle every time?
We have a minority of our patients have ports. We actually try to avoid ports if we can, so most of them are doing a fresh needle each time.
Okay. And how did it occur to you to reach out to Jeremy and his team to do something like this?
Well, Nationwide Children's has a great innovations group, and when I joined Nationwide a few years ago, I met Jeremy through a project that he was doing with one of my colleagues. And we started talking about some of the issues I face with my particular patient population, and it's been just a great partnership ever since.
Is the kind of issues that Dr. Dunn's describing, the anxiety and the pain and helping distract children, is that typical what you're called to participate in, Jeremy?
Sometimes. I would say it's about a 50-50 split. The other portion of what we generally work on are projects in support of research.
Okay.
And so a lot of the projects that we work on tend to be things that are more on the cutting edge of what can be accomplished
with
technology.
Not patient-related necessarily.
Right. This one is a little bit of an anomaly, but in a really good way.
Yeah.
This is one of the projects that we get to see, you know, the direct patient impact with it, and the impact is pretty profound. It's a great thing to see. So,
tell us, the game is called Voxel Bay, and you brought in some pictures today. This is radio, so it doesn't help a whole bunch, but I get to see the visuals. How did this game differ in your design that you would design for anybody?
That's a great question. So when we started to dig into this, we knew that there were many studies that showed the value of virtual reality in pain and distraction or pain relief.
Mm-hmm.
But what we didn't find were people that were using it in a clinical setting. So then what we started to uncover were the reasons that was happening. So one of the main motivating factors in the design of this overall system was the games needed to be something that could be playable without the use of hands.
Okay.
Because the patients are getting infusions, they need to remain mostly motionless, which there's not a lot of games out there that you don't play with your hands. So we were kind of left at, you know, baseline ground zero, and we had to come up with gameplay mechanics in games that you could play without using your hands. So we ended up using head glances to play the games. And then breathing is another game mechanic. So we have a microphone that's attached to the headset. And the headset was something that we also had to custom design for this. So there's a microphone on the headset, and the wearer can breathe in and out, and it picks up on the sound of their breathing. And they use that to propel the sailboat forward in the game. There's one game called Angry Crabs where you launch crabs at the seagull city in the background and knock it down using your breath. And so that's one of the ways that they play games. So.
I, Dr. Dunn, I would have thought, you know, before talking to you both today, that what you're asking Jeremy to do would be impossible to not have hands involved.
Well, and that's why this has been such a great collaboration, because Jeremy and his team and met with my team over and over again, my nurses and my team, and even with patients early on to get patient feedback. And so they really understood what my patients needed and were able to customize that for us.
Were there other considerations, health-related considerations, besides not having them move their hands, obviously, during the infusions that Jeremy and his team had to be wary of?
Yes, we had to be concerned about the weight of headsets because most conventional headsets are too heavy for children. So we had to deal with that issue. And also in a busy pediatric hematology oncology clinic, we can't have the risk of transmitting infections from patient to patient. So our headsets actually had to be disposable. So everything about this headset was actually custom designed for my clinical setting.
It is made of cardboard.
Yeah, it is.
And what else? I mean, is everything on it disposable?
The headphones are included in it. So we incorporated headphones in it. They're inexpensive headphones.
Okay.
So it doesn't add much to the price of the unit.
Kind you get on the air when you're in an airplane or something that they.
Yeah, about on that level. And so they're not fantastic headphones, but they do the job very well.
What was the greatest challenge for you, Jeremy, in doing this?
There were a lot of challenges with it. Like I said, when we were level set with not having a game that we could use, when we didn't have a headset that we could use, it was, you know, starting from nothing.
Yeah.
But in a lot of ways, that's the opportunity of a lifetime. I mean, it's not often that you're faced with that kind of challenge. And the way that we've been able to design every aspect of it and kind of rise to that challenge is I'm very proud of the work that we've done. So.
You're listening to Wellness Wednesday on All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about a new virtual reality game that patients at Nationwide Children's Hospital are given to play while they're getting infusions. It's called Factor Replacement Therapy. It's for boys with hemophilia. You just heard from Jeremy Patterson. He's user experience designer and interactive architect at Nationwide Children's Hospital, and also with us by phone, Dr. Amy Dunn. She's a director of hematology at Nationwide Children's. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. So let's talk about what's happened since Voxel Bay was introduced. Dr. Dunn, what do the kids say?
Well, in general, the kids love it, and also their parents love it. So what happens in our clinic right now is we're actually asking scientific questions about the use of virtual reality in this setting. So we want to make sure that we can incorporate this into a busy clinic, that the parents like it, that the nurses like it, and that the children like it. And so we are actually asking series of questions before and after they use the virtual reality product. And thus far, the results have been overwhelmingly positive.
What has struck you about the responses from the users, Jeremy?
It's striking because we've been involved after we rolled this out. So we've been able to see the patients after they're using VR in the clinic and getting their blood draws and labs and infusions. And when we see it, we've seen some of the best of it. I mean, we've seen patients go through this procedure. One of them, you know, got the needle stick, and up until that point, he was fine. The needle went in, he said, ouch, and then he continued playing the game, took the headset off to pick out his Band-Aid, and then started playing the game again. We didn't realize that you know, in other circumstances, infusing that patient, it can be very difficult.
Hmm.
So seeing the AB between it, it really is pretty remarkable, the difference, and seeing the impact and seeing the difference that it makes is really, really rewarding to be able to see that.
You know, Dr. Dunn, I understand emotionally, and you mentioned the parents, you know, it just must be so much better for the kids emotionally, better for the parents emotionally. Medically, does it make a difference?
We certainly think it will. Anything that decreases the difficulty of doing your routine medical treatment should increase your adherence to that treatment, we think. So our dream is now that we've been able to use this in our inpatient or in our clinic setting, that perhaps we could also use this in the home setting where most of my patients are doing their infusions.
Oh, okay. And are there other departments? Are you working on other projects now, Jeremy, because of this?
Yeah, there have been a few, and it seems like every day more people become aware of this and there's more and more questions about it because the application with this is very broad, even, you know, beyond a pediatric population.
Right.
A fun game, a fun experience is a fun game and a fun experience. So whether you're a kid or an adult, you can appreciate that. So so it could span age groups as well. So there have been quite a few, some people from burn treatment, anesthesia, have expressed interest in this, emergency department as well. So,
yeah. And Dr. Dunn, were there any templates out there? Were there any other, are there any other hospitals out there doing anything like this that you know of?
No one who's doing anything to quite the same level that we have. There have been some preliminary VR environments in the past, but they really weren't customized to children, and they didn't have the hands-free model. Something else that's really unique about ours is that we have an orchestration dashboard that Jeremy's team has built. And so my hemophilia nurse is actually can orchestrate what's going on during the patient experience. So, for example, if she notices that the patient is getting more anxious, she can increase the level of distraction. Or if the patient, if she wants to trigger them to do a breathing game to help calm them down, she can do that as well. So that's also really a unique feature of what we've done.
Oh, because they use their breath to control the game. They can also use the game to control their breath to calm them down.
Yeah, or in some cases, you know, the physician in the room might see something happening and know that they need to trigger something that's amplified distraction at that point. Another side benefit that we've been seeing with it that we didn't anticipate but has ended up being a very positive benefit of it, in that dashboard, there's a view where you can see a live stream of what the patient is seeing in the VR headset.
Okay.
And parents really like to be able to see that. It almost ends up acting as distraction for the parents as well when they're in clinic. So one of the things that we've kicked around is the idea of making that interactive in and of itself. So the parent can participate in the game through that dashboard and maybe make it a little bit of a multiplayer game. So that's another avenue that it could take.
And Dr. Dunn, you said most of the patients do their infusions at home. Did you say that?
That's our goal. So for my boys who infuse frequently, so some of my patients infuse as often as daily. And so for that, we actually teach the parents and the children to do their own infusions. So I've had boys as young as 6 be able to do their infusion all by themselves. So it's a pretty amazing thing to see boys stick themselves with needles.
You know, and this just gets me thinking about all kinds of people, whether they, you know, need this to distract them from something or not, who can't use their hands or their arms or don't have, you know, control of their body, could play this game.
They definitely could. But one of the great things about Nationwide Children's with our innovations group is that we can custom designed to different needs. So once we understand the patient population and their specific needs, Jeremy's group can then actually design for them. So that's what we hope to do now. We've done our proof of concept that, you know, we're able to do this. This works in this one patient population. So now we would like to spread to others. But we know that there may be some more individualization that's needed for different patient populations.
Has there been outside interest in what you're doing?
There's been a lot of outside interest. We've had quite a bit of press recently about what we're doing, and so everyone that I see or talk to or hears about it, they want to know when can I get this for my patients.
Right. Is there any concern about the impact of VR on children? I know it's not completely clear, you know, what the long-term effects of it as it stands now.
Yeah, that's something we've taken into account as well. Previously, the American Academy of Pediatrics didn't promote screen time for patients under the age of 6. They've now subsequently reduced that to under the age of 2. But we had gone with the 6 age range for now, so we haven't used this for anyone under 6. And Jeremy's group has also done a great job of designing so that there wouldn't be things like motion sickness and involved. So we've been really thoughtful, and we've also developed games that we don't want kids playing for hours. So we're limiting the amount of exposure that they have.
Okay. Well, Dr. Amy Dunn, thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate your time today.
Thank you.
Dr. Amy Dunn is Director of Hematology at Nationwide Children's Hospital. And also Jeremy Patterson, thanks to you as well.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Jeremy Patterson is a user experience designer and interactive architect at Nationwide Children's Hospital. They have worked together to create a virtual reality game for kids who have hemophilia and go through factor replacement therapy. Really interesting. We'll have a link to an article about it on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. This is Wellness Wednesday on All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to Wellness Wednesday on All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Kristen Hare, who was born with cerebral palsy, uses a wheelchair to get around, but she still wants to exercise, and she found it at a local Zumba studio. Kristen joins us now. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Appreciate it. And joining us is Zumba instructor and owner of Century Body Studio in Columbus, Jennifer Rubin-Koenig. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Welcome. Thank you for having us.
Kristen, you were hesitant to join an exercise class for a long time. So tell people about why that is and what your experience had been with exercise.
Well, most exercises that I have found for people with disabilities, they're very regimented and they're kind of boring. It's like, okay, do 10 sets of this, do 3 sets of that. Okay, you're done. It's just very regimented and boring. And they kind of make you feel like you don't want to do anything because they're just very militaristic and not fun.
And then classes for, you know, just general classes out there, not necessarily for people who are disabled in some way. What about those?
Well, those I found a lot of the times I couldn't keep up with the movements and I'd get lost. Mm-hmm. And then people would assume that I needed more help than I did. So I just didn't go.
Interesting distinction, though. It would assume you needed more help than you did. What were they assuming?
Lots of times they would assume that I was either a paraplegic or a quadriplegic. And then they would ask me questions like, well, you're in a wheelchair, so why are you here?
Right. And how did you respond, Jennifer Rubin-Koenig, when this opportunity presented itself?
When she came into the studio, I said, you ready to take a class? And she looked at me like I was like crazy. And I said, well, come on in. Come on into the studio. And the smile on her face told me that this was pretty much where she belonged. And all of the students and the staff pretty much wanted her to come into class, no questions asked.
Because everyone's used to being in a Zumba class where you fall behind and it takes you time to catch up and figure out what everybody's doing.
Exactly. Right. Most people probably feel like they're in a wheelchair maybe the first time they take class.
Yeah. What inspired you to take up Zumba?
Well, I ran into an infomercial for Zumba about 5-6 years ago, and I looked at it and I said, oh, that looks like fun. But wait, I don't know if I could do that because I can't move my legs.
Yeah.
So I was like, I just, you know, I looked at it and I was like, that looks like fun, but I don't know that I could do that. And I have a little bit of experience with dance because my dad is a ballroom instructor.
Wow.
So I grew up around different types of dancing. So fast forward 5 years, and I run into Jen.
And you guys just kind of met, and
she rolled into the studio one afternoon, one evening, and just to check it out. And I just said, "Are you ready to take class?" And she came back a couple days later, and we rolled her in with her assistant, and That's it. She just had a great time.
So any adaptations that you can describe to listeners?
She doesn't really need any adaptations. Zumba is feet and hands.
Right.
And Kristen, we put her in the studio to the right so she can see the instructor. And she moves her arms. And sometimes she can move her wheelchair. And last night when I was watching her, she moves her head and her body and her arms. And she even did Zumba toning with toning sticks in her hand. And when we were doing core, she did some core.
Yeah.
She did some crunches in her wheelchair.
I did.
How do you do crunches in the wheelchair?
You just basically bend forward and just do the crunches.
So how long have you been doing this now?
I would say about 2 years.
About two years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So you've seen, notice a difference then.
I've lost about 12 pounds.
That's fantastic.
So, yes, it works, people. It really does work.
She's been very inspiring to, I think, other students that come into class as well.
Does it make you, Jennifer Rubenkoenig, does it make you think about different ways to present Zumba when you have someone like Kristen Herer in your class?
Yes, I have students that call me on the phone all the time, and the first thing they say is, I'm really uncoordinated. And this next thing I say is, I have a student with cerebral palsy in a wheelchair that takes my class.
If she can do it.
And if she can do it, you can do it. And I said, she's inspiring to everybody. So, and she is. And I've had students say to me, it's unbelievable. I had this smile on her face in class. So I say, you can do it no matter what your disability.
You're listening to Wellness Wednesday on All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about... Kristen Herer is a Zumba student at Century Body Studio. She started about 2 years ago with her teacher, Jennifer Rubenkoenig, a Zumba instructor and owner of Century Body, showing that anybody can do Zumba. It doesn't if you can't use your legs, you can use your arms and the rest of your body. And I suppose if you can't use your arms, but you can use your legs, I mean, you could adapt it in all different ways.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. There's an instructor out there. Her name is Karina Gutierrez out, and I'm not even sure she's in the United States. And she's also in a wheelchair. She's got this syndrome. Her legs are really short. So she can move her legs a little bit and her arms a little bit, and she teaches.
Her actual disability is called osteogenesis imperfecta.
Uh-huh.
It's called brittle bone disease.
Okay.
And she started doing Zumba because she found that it helped her health-wise. She actually grew about an inch and a half.
Wow.
I didn't even know that.
Wow. Do you try to get other people that you know? Because you've been to plenty of other classes for people who are disabled.
Well, typically I'm the only one in the room that's disabled.
Okay.
But I have attempted to get the folks that I live with in my community to come to class with me. And they're like, oh, I can't. Why? Have you tried?
Mm-hmm.
No. Well, how do you know that you can't do it if you haven't tried yet?
Everyone's trying to be perfect all the time. And even, I mean, there's only one or two people in any class I've ever been in who actually looks like they know what they're doing.
Any of my students would tell you that at any point during my class, I'll forget my own choreography and pretty much stop and look around and say, I'm not sure what I'm doing.
Moving.
Just keep moving.
I'm a firm believer in the just keep moving.
We call it solos.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you find yourself making your own adaptations sometimes?
Oh, I have to.
Yeah?
I have to. Simply because there's a lot of songs that have a lot of leg and feet movements to them. So I have to sort of go, okay, let's figure out how to do this in upper body.
Yeah. How much mobility do you have in your arms? Full? Or is it somewhat limited to?
80%.
Okay. All right. Has it increased your mobility?
It has.
Your flexibility, that kind of thing?
It's increased my flexibility and my stamina by at least 30%.
Are there like recommended exercises for people who have cerebral palsy?
excuse me. There's a lot of doing weights, like lifting weights, and a lot of things for stretching and flexibility, which is mostly what a physical therapist would focus on if you were to take PT. But again, it's very repetitious. It's very just, okay, do this. Now do this.
Yeah.
And it's part of what makes Zumba so much fun is it's set to music.
Yeah. Right, you can't do physical therapy to music, but maybe you can.
I don't know. It seems like you could, but you could. You know, how have your doctors responded to your work with Zumba?
They love it. They're all for everything I've done up to this point. And I was just talking to my physical therapist last week, and I told him that I was going to take an instructor course in December. He was like, "Wow. You really decided to do this?" I was like, "Yep." He's like, "Okay, go for it then."
Kristen's going to become a Zumba instructor.
Are you going to become a Zumba instructor for all different kinds of people, or are you thinking of focusing on people who use wheelchairs?
Well, I plan on doing Zumba for all body types and all limitations or not limitations.
Uh-huh.
My ideal goal is to co-teach with someone that's able-bodied.
Okay.
So they can demonstrate the leg movements. And if you have, you know, full body motion, just follow that person, whoever that person ends up being. But if you don't, then I can adapt it for you. That way you can have as much fun as the able-bodied person standing next to you. Mm-hmm.
Or as much failure. I'm sorry, I keep focusing on that. I apologize. So your dad, you said he was a...
He's a ballroom dancer. Yeah.
He must be like over the top over this.
He actually likes the fact that I'm doing Zumba, but he doesn't quite get it because he's never seen it before.
Ballroom is very different than Zumba.
Well, yeah, it's of course different, but
ballroom is very structured.
Yeah.
Zumba is not structured.
Zumba is not.
If anyone has a question or comment out there, I should say we're talking about disability and fitness. Have you felt excluded because of a disability at the gym or an exercise class? Give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org, which is a question I wanted to ask you, Kristen, here. Have you ever felt excluded, like unwelcome?
In Zumba class?
No,
in general,
when you've tried other kinds of exercise classes.
In other places, a lot of times, like I said, I would feel like people were staring at me or thinking bad about me or feeling sorry for me. And I don't like feeling that way. When I came to Jen's class, that's one of the first things I asked is, how is this structured? Because I don't want to be the elephant in the room, so to speak. And she's asked me, "Why do you think we would act that way?" And I said, "Well, because it's happened before."
Mm-hmm.
And she promised me up and down and sideways that nobody would treat me like that. And they haven't. They've actually been almost like an extended family for me.
Yeah. Yeah, I get that. When you meet a group of people you can work out with, that's like gold. Yeah. Why did you think that, you know, when Kristen rolled into the classroom that day, why did you think you could and that it would work?
Because I think exactly what she said, Zoom is not very structured and you can't do it right and you can't do it wrong.
Right.
Which is unlike a lot of maybe dance classes. And so when she rolled in, she was no different than someone in the studio that has a knee issue or has an arm issue. I had a shoulder problem. So to me, it was just one other limitation that several people have. So we made it work, and my staff and the students were, nobody batted an eyelash. It was no different.
Have you learned anything from Kristen?
Well, interestingly enough, we just added a new format to the studio called Strong by Zumba. And originally I was thinking this is really only for the super fit. But when I realized that Kristen can do regular Zumba and modify it, that anybody can do any exercise.
Yeah.
And so it's made me a little bit more open and more flexible to all different people
what
coming
to class.
What
the possibilities are, right.
Exactly.
Email from Marty who asks, how many Zumba classes are recommended per week to get results? Do you have to do it 3 times a week? I'm just a beginner.
And like any cardiovascular exercise, I would suggest doing any sort of cardio 3 times a week. With Zumba, the more you do it, the more the moves make sense to you. Mm-hmm. And so the choreography sort of comes. But I would say 2 or 3 times a week is probably a good a good
the
number.
The more often you do it, the less lost you are.
Right. Well, exactly. That's, you know.
Like Megan and Gehanna, you're on the air. Hi, Megan.
Hi.
Go ahead.
I was just calling. I about a year ago, was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. And at the time, my fitness routine largely consisted of going to CrossFit. And while I love that, I just realized that, you know, due to my diagnosis and the potential complications that can come with my symptoms, that it just wasn't serving me the way that it had mm-hmm. before. Mm-hmm. And so now, even though I'm physically don't have a ton of limitations, that's something I have to keep top of mind. So it's definitely been a humbling experience to see certain exercises and go, okay, I just can't do, you know, the single leg pistol. I need to just do a regular old squat. Mm-hmm. It's a little bruise to the ego, I guess, but
well, that you could ever do it, you should wear as a badge of honor.
That's right.
Yeah, you should.
Yeah, difficult.
We have two students with MS. That nobody knows that. Two students at the studio have MS, and they modify and they take it where they need to go. And when they leave the room to get a breath of fresh air, we know why. The staff know who it is. But the other students don't need to know. And if they don't want to tell anybody, they don't need to tell anyone. It's a safety thing for us, but you can do Zumba.
Oh, yeah. I do do Zumba. I do all sorts of stuff.
Good.
I just like to do whatever. But I just wanted to, you know, encourage people, even if you can't do it all, just do something. Even if I always say it doesn't matter how slow you're running, you're always lapping everyone on the couch. So just get up and go.
That's great, Megan. Thank you so much for your call.
Oh, thanks for taking it. Have a great day.
You too. So when are you going to be certified to teach?
As of December 17th.
Oh, wow. This is soon then.
We're hosting the training. It's a Zumba license training on December 17th at the studio.
Okay.
And Kristen will be there with a couple other of my students who are getting licensed. And Kelly Bullard's doing the licensing, and she's very excited to have Kristen there. And it's at the studio.
Will this be a first for her?
I don't know if it'll be a first for Kelly to have someone with in a wheelchair. I'm going to say no. She's been all over the world.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, good luck with that, Kristen.
Thank you.
Best wishes for every success.
Thank you.
That's Kristen Herrer. She's a Zumba student at Century Body Studio. She's also uses a wheelchair and has shown that even people who use a wheelchair can not just participate, but thoroughly enjoy Zumba. And Jennifer Rubin-Koenig, thank you for joining
us
today.
Thank you very much.
Jennifer's the Zumba instructor who and owner of Century Body Studio, where Kristen Herrer first went to enjoy Zumba. More Wellness Wednesday is coming up on All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to Wellness Wednesday on All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Mental illness affects 1 in 5 adults every year, but resources to treat mental illness are limited. Mental health professionals are starting to turn to a new model to better treat adult patients and better afford the treatment. It's called the Clubhouse model. Joining us is program manager at Pathway Clubhouse in Columbus, Teresa Conley. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
We're talking today about the Clubhouse model. What sets this model apart from others? What's different about it?
Well, it kind of focuses on the positives with the people. You don't focus on the illness, but you rather focus on what they can do. And you try to increase socialization, employment, just really get people back into mainstreamed into society.
Why do they call it the Clubhouse model?
Because it's a club rather than like a treatment facility. So people have like ownership. It's their clubhouse. And they feel, you know, like they're part of something.
There's one in Dayton, another in Cleveland, and now a third is reopened in Franklin County. I say reopened. Why did the other one shut down? What's the deal?
Well, technically, we never shut down, okay. But just due to funding and different changes within the system, we were doing some other stuff. We were focusing on support employment and case management, but we still kept a psychosocial piece going. So we did have a core group of people that we were still doing some clubhouse-type stuff with. But now we've relaunched and we're working towards the Fountain House Clubhouse model.
And what's that?
Well, it's based after a program that started in New York City in 1948. What happened was there were some patients that got released from a state hospital there. And there really weren't too many options back then. So they got together and they titled themselves, We Are Not Alone. And they used some family support and eventually got a little funding and hired some professionals. But it kind of just was a sort of revolutionary back then to think that, you know, they could maybe work and recover. And so it was so successful that there are now over 300 clubhouses around the world that follow that same model.
What's a typical clubhouse day?
Okay, good question. We have what's called a work order day, and that kind of mimics like a regular work day for people.
A work ordered day.
They call it work order day.
Gotcha.
And that's where first thing up, we have a meeting where people decide what tasks they're going to work on and what work unit they want to work in. Most all clubhouses, everywhere you go, will have at least a couple work units. We have three. We have a food service unit, which also operates a snack bar. We have a business unit that has a newsletter, a GED program. They do the billing and the attendance for the program. And just clerical type stuff. And then we have a retail unit, which has a Treasures on Broad resale shop and an annex where you can get some bargains and lower priced items. So people pick what they want to do. Oh, they can also work the front desk or do like the outside, the porches and such. So there's plenty of tasks. So people choose what they want to do. Everything's open to everybody. It's all voluntary. And then you break for lunch. You have like typical breaks. So that's why it's called like work order day. So you feel like you've accomplished something. It's not like it's all leisure or all like sitting in groups and such.
And at its center is an actual house, right?
Yes. We're an old mansion located at 1203 East Broad, Champion and Broad, on the Near East Side.
And how do you get involved? Do you just show up or are you referred by a professional there or how does that work?
Another great question. But we are accepting referrals from all over Franklin County if you have a primary diagnosis of a serious persistent mental illness. And most people get attached through their case managers, through like any of the major mental health centers. We are owned and operated by Columbus Area Integrated Health Services Incorporated, which is down the street. But we also accept referrals like from Southeast Mental Health, North Central, Concord, just to name drop a few. But
is there like group therapy sessions going on there? Is that kind of thing going on?
No, not therapy. It's not considered treatment. It's okay. Really focuses on the clubhouse. It's side-by-side work, members and staff. Like you might be cooking lunch. You might be doing attendance. You might be getting the newsletter prepared, working on some donations that come through to price them. So it's real work. It's not therapy.
And I guess it's real work. It's not therapy, but real work
but
can
therapeutic.
Be therapy.
Yes.
It's therapeutic.
Yes.
Got you. That's a distinction
yes.
right there.
In a very different way, just because it's more normalizing.
Uh-huh.
You know, and it's like the work order day also makes it like there's deadlines. You have stuff that has to get done. And so people feel that urgency. And then it kind of helps that then they feel part of something. This increases their socialization. It increases their skills in an indirect way. And their confidence gets them back into society.
Confidence is a big thing. How many people participate in the clubhouse?
Right now, we have about 92
wow.
active members. Like on any given day, about 25, 30 may show up.
Okay.
If we have something going on, like free food, you'll see more.
But sure.
Same, actually, something fun. But we're working on increasing attendance and increasing our membership. That's one of our main goals right now.
How many can you handle?
Well, I don't think we've ever really had a cap, because I think what you see is sometimes people have a lifetime membership.
Okay.
So that doesn't mean they're going to come for their entire life. They may stop coming, get a full-time job, life changes, go back to school. All kinds of different things can happen, but they are always welcome back. So we would never have any, like, you know, it'd be like, oh, great, you're back. We would love to have you back. So that helps, because sometimes people have, with cycles of mental illness,
yeah,
you may, you know, feel like you have symptoms again, and you're always welcome back. So we've never capped it. I don't know if we'll have to look at that in the future, but right now we are love to take people.
And when you say lifetime membership, do people have to pay to be a member?
No, there's no charge.
Okay, but someone's paying for all this.
Well, actually, we do have funding through Franklin County Adam Board.
Okay.
And so that helps.
Yeah. So. What are some of the things you've learned about therapeutic tasks as program manager at Pathway Clubhouse?
Well, I think you can never, like, doubt what people are capable of doing. I mean, sometimes you see people just have not had a chance to work for many years, but given that opportunity and you get them back into action, you would be surprised at the wonderful skills and talents that people have. So that, I'm always really pleased and happy to see people come out of their shell and just really get better and do well. And,
yeah.
You know, they take a lot of pride in the clubhouse, too.
Have you seen people launch into regular jobs?
Oh, definitely.
Tell us some stories about that, what you've seen.
Well, we have people who've gone on to get degrees in college. We've had people who've gone on to get full-time jobs, get married, and do really well. And we have many people who have started, like, a transitional employment job or a supported employment job part-time, but it's the first time they've worked in forever. And they're so proud. They get a paycheck. They just feel like they're part of society and accomplishing something.
Could you talk a little bit about, what kind of mental illness diagnoses you're typically, what you're talking about in general for people who may not be familiar with the jargon?
Okay. Well, most generally, wouldn't necessarily rule anybody out, but mm-hmm. most generally you would be looking at the schizophrenia or bipolar or, like, major depression. I think that most of the time that people do have a primary diagnosis of one of those three.
And are there people that you've ever had to kick out and say, you know what, you just can't participate because you just can't work it out?
I'd rather not discuss that. No, yeah. I'm just kidding. That's with anywhere. You're always going to have
that. Other people.
And we
do.
We have we have rules and policies and procedures. And of course, we want to have a safe, peaceful environment for everybody so that no one is, you know, feeling bullied or feeling afraid. And it wouldn't really help. You know, so if someone can't follow the clubhouse community, we would have to kick them off the island.
Yeah, yeah. How much staff is there at any given time?
We have 6.5 staff and a part-time office manager.
Okay. And there are other more social aspects too. Do you have parties? Do you do that kind of a thing?
Yes, we do. We have a Halloween party coming up this week.
Yeah.
That's just like you just stated, like any office. We do celebrate the holidays. We're actually open on Thanksgiving and Christmas. We celebrate, if someone would retire or somebody would move. We do things just like you would find in most places.
And what about family?
Well, family are welcome. We encourage them. We have different events. Our agency actually hosts family night twice a year, which are really nice and gets people involved. And then as far as the clubhouse, we would welcome any involvement with the family. And we've done some trips, like out in the community, and people have brought family members.
Oh, okay. Like, feel like, what do you mean by trips?
Kind of like, we have an annual trip. This year we went to St. Louis.
Oh.
And last year we went to Chicago. So we do like big trips that people plan for and save for and look forward to. And we get a chartered bus. And it's just real normalizing and real fun.
You said it's in a mansion, an old mansion on Broad. And there's some beautiful old places along there. And you did give us the address, too, right?
1203.
1203 Broad Street. And tell us what it's like inside. What what kind of places are in there?
It's got a lot of natural woodwork. We have some stained glass windows going up the steps. It's a big open area. There's a big, large dining room. Snack bar is attached to that. We have a commercial kitchen.
Uh-huh.
We have a second floor, which is mostly offices. But they're big and they have, you know, you can tell it was built in the 1890s. So it's got the fireplaces and they're not working fireplaces. Yeah. And then the third floor is a big open area also. And that's where we have our art room. And we also have a conference room. We've sort of split it in half. We do have a pretty strong art program. We have a lot of people very interested in art. And we have a person who comes, an art teacher, twice a week and teaches art.
That's a really big thing. And I would imagine some really incredible stuff comes out of there.
Yes, we've had a couple art shows and it's been very successful. We have some very talented, creative people. And it's they take so much pride in that somebody buys their art. And we let the artist get 70% of whatever. We're just taking the money for supplies. Mm-hmm. So it works out really well.
What does this compare to if people are thinking about what's out there in the universe of therapies for people mm-hmm. with, mental illness, the likes of schizophrenia mm-hmm. and bipolar? How does this compare?
Well, we're the only one in Columbus, so, and it is, like I said, the clubhouse. There are other programs that focus just on employment, and they're very good, too, very excellent. And then there's programs that are drop-in centers where there is not the structure, and people can come in and get some support,
hang out,
maybe get on the computer, hang out. And that's needed, too. That's very much needed. The clubhouse kind of is unique in that you've got the structure of the work order day, and then you've got the social support. People end up making friends and end up, getting involved, and then they're able to get jobs because we provide both transitional employment, which is 6 to 9 months, where we would job coach you. And
how do you measure success?
Okay, well, we measure success by people having a much more stable life, improving their quality of life, getting a job, having stable housing. I think, and in general, like funders would measure success by decreased hospitalizations and the decreased need for more expensive services out there.
And what have you learned from other clubhouses? How do you make Columbus different, or is that not necessarily a goal?
Well, I guess there's over 300 clubhouses, and I've had the pleasure to visit some of them. And we just recently saw Independence Center in St. Louis. They have a really huge clubhouse, 200 a day, 800 members, and it's in an old warehouse. And so it's quite different. There's structure of the work order day and there's structure of work units. However, you have to kind of look every city, your population and your size.
But there's
one in Fort Wayne, Indiana, that's kind of similar to us size-wise. So every clubhouse is slightly different, but they all have the one thing in common of following the same standards.
Do you see opportunity for another kind of clubhouse in Columbus?
That would be great. I think there's always room for more clubhouses. In fact, if you look at neighboring states, mm-hmm. Michigan has an amazing 29 clubhouses.
Wow. Okay.
Which some of them are very small, but they're scattered all over the state of Michigan.
Uh-huh.
Now, Indiana, also a neighboring state, has 5. So I could see us have a couple more. That would be awesome.
Yeah.
We're just so happy to be one of the 3 here in Columbus. Yeah. We got Dayton and Cleveland, Miracle Clubhouse Dayton, and Magnolia in Cleveland. Wait, I'm sorry, Miracle Dayton, Magnolia in Cleveland.
All right. Well, Teresa Conley, thanks for joining us today to talk about it. I really appreciate it.
Can I give a shout out to the Pathway members and staff that are listening to this? All right,
absolutely.
Go Pathway.
Go Pathway.
Am I still online?
Yeah.
Okay. I just want to thank the BREAD organization.
Okay.
Building Responsibility, Equality, and Dignity. They were very instrumental in helping us and our agency, Columbus Area Integrated Health.